This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to Speed City. Woohoo! Man, we are fired up about tonight's show. We got IndyCar back in action.
Yep.
Got a little F1 to talk about. Got a little World Superbikes to talk about. What else, Jonathan?
You got some NASCAR to talk about. Yeah. They're gonna soon catch up with ice hockey if they're not careful.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be I went to an ice hockey and I went to some ice hockey. Yeah,
a fight broke out.
But another fight in NASCAR.
Yeah,
but a good one too.
That was a good one. That was a pretty serious.
Kyle Busch and Joey Logano, and it was a knockout. I mean, it was the judges didn't need to look at the fight too hard. Absolutely. It was pretty. It was interesting because Joey Logano basically took Kyle Busch out of the race, and it is his home race. Remember, he's from Vegas.
Oh, that's right.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's a big one for him, and he was looking at a certain third place.
Yeah. Well, and also we've got a driver calling into the show. We got Matt Bell calling in.
I'd like to get his opinion on that.
Yeah, we want to get a driver's opinion. He's going to be driving the number 57 Audi in the IMSA at Sebring coming up. So he's going to be talking about his season and next weekend too. So, and also tonight we are live on Facebook Live on the Talk 1370 Facebook page. So you can check us out there if you're near a computer. So, all right, Jonathan, let's talk some more about that NASCAR deal because that was a full on punch. That was
a full on punch. And like I said, you know, in a weird way, and yeah, the pictures of go check it out, to be honest. Get on the net and check out Kyle Busch's bleeding head because it was a proper fight. He first of all got a punch in on Joey Logano. That was the first round. And then they came out in the second round, and basically everybody else got involved. But when they came down to the 10th round, it was the official that really impressed me. There was this huge guy basically trying to stop Kyle Busch from making any further inroads, and he was struggling. The guy must have been about 6'6". And yeah, check that out. That's a pretty impressive picture.
There's blood on his face.
That's a proper fight.
We're putting it up on Facebook Live.
To be fair, I mean, like I said, we'll get the opinion of a proper driver later in the show. But to be fair, it could have really gone pear shaped because he went flying down the pit lane backwards to finish his race. So it was turn four. You're flat out right through there. They tapped twice. They actually hit coming into turn four. That could have been a disaster. And then basically they came back at each other. So it was pretty good stuff, which is all taking away from what was the better story of the day and a brilliant story for the day, which was Martin Truex Jr. Taking a win, his first win of the year, and the third different winner of three races now. Kurt Busch, of course, taking the 500, and Brad Keselowski, who should have won today and was leading – with two laps to go and got a feel for Brad. Something went wrong with the car because he went first to fifth in a matter of no time.
I thought it might have been a tire at first, but I don't think so. So what about the segments, though? How many did...
Truex won the lot. And now with this new stage situation with
stages,
NASCAR,
yeah.
which I quite like, actually. So basically what they're doing with big races and with all of these races is making it a stage win. So in other words, you do an 80-lap stint and the winner at that stage... Well, because if you know your NASCAR, you'll know that basically a lot of the time, you know, you only need to lead on the last lap. But now you're getting 10 points for winning a stage. Truex today won stage one, won stage two. That's 20 points. And then you get 40 for winning. So he got 60 points towards his hopes of getting into the chase. And I think that really, I quite like the way that mixes it up.
You know what? I got to be honest. When I'm watching NASCAR, it's kind of in the background for the first few hours, right? I'm watching it, but I'm not really sitting there focused on it. And, you know, when I see
I only get up for pee breaks and popcorn change. What are you talking about?
But, you know, when you look up and you go, all right, we got 10, 20 laps left. You're really starting to pay attention. But now with the segments,
you're absolutely right. Right. And I mean, you know, law of averages, you look at it, and Jimmy Johnson, 7-time champion, is probably smiling because, you know, what I love about Jimmy is his consistency. And, you know, Brad Keselowski's doing it nowadays. But Jimmy, you know, is still right up there. And if you look at these stages things, you'd say, well, he's got a good chance. Him and his crew chief know how to do it. And if I'm looking at the whole year of NASCAR, I'm expecting someone like Jimmy to come through and be the consistent guy that he's been for so many years.
Yeah, I'm going to see how this segment thing plays out because there's a lot of people complaining about it the first week.
Really?
You know, somebody tweeted at us the first week and they were like, you know what? I hate it right now, but I'm going to give it a chance and see how it goes. You know, you just got the idea, I like it on paper, and I haven't sat and watched all the races, both races so far, real focused to say, do I really like this or not? You watched most of it today. I mean, do you think you're going to like it or not?
I do. Like I just explained, I think it now gives you, like you say, that reason not to just tune in at the end where you know, I mean, there's always a lot of cautions in NASCAR and there's always a lot of big pileups and smashes. But I think now when you're racing that hard for a stage win necessarily, and it of course will become more and more crucial when you think about it towards the end of the year when points do make prizes. I mean, there's going to be guys who are like, hey, I'm in sixth place. I got to go. And also there's the idea that, you know, you've got the fuel strategies too. You know, when do you come in and, you know, I think it's going to make it more interesting. And hey, hats off to NASCAR. Are you listening, Formula One?
Yeah.
Because they're ready to make the changes and make them strong and make them innovative and keep their audience interested. Yeah. You know, you just said not everybody likes it, but they're talking about it and we're talking about it. So it's a change that, you know, when I say, you know, you can also make a bad change like they did in qualifying Formula 1. But anyway, that's another
thing. Last year Formula 1, right.
So, but anyway.
Well, speaking of Formula 1, we're going to come back to this later, but there's been some, you know, when Liberty Media took over, they offered shares to all the teams. Remember, they said they're going to set aside like $1 billion or something like that. Well, Ferrari has taken them up on that, and we're going to talk about that later. But before we go to Formula 1, I want to talk a little IndyCar.
Ah, yes!
Because I know you got to watch all the Indy. I actually was at South by Southwest today, and I have to say the word of the day at South by was disruptive. I think... If I took a count, the word disruptive was mentioned about 40 times in each session. It's such a buzzword thing, but
Well, what's it mean then?
Well,
come on now.
You know, it's disruptive. It's like it's the new thing. It's like what's going to be the next big thing? Like Uber was disruptive in the taxi cab industry. So what's going to be the next disruptive thing? It was crazy. Every time I turned around, somebody was saying disruptive. So we have to apply the word.
That's very disrupting.
We have to find a way to put that in tonight. Show, but
okay.
But let's talk IndyCar.
Yes, let's talk IndyCar. Great start. I'm going to say it. You know me. I take these times to make a statement, and you always reminded me at the end of the season, John. I think this is going to be one of the best Indy seasons in 10 years.
Oh, okay, that's a bold statement.
If not 20.
Okay, why?
Why? We've got a combination of youth, experience, badasses, Indy 500 winners, a lot of teams changing their lineups, a lot of experience out there, a lot of really good young rookies, and more importantly, Joseph Newgarden in an American with a chance to win the title. And that doesn't sound that amazing. But when you really think about it, he's now joined Penske. Penske have, you know, if you've got a Chip Ganassi car or a Penske car, you've got a good chance of winning Indy.
Right.
Andretti haven't had the success in the last few years. And now with this kid, Joseph Newgarden, he is the blue-eyed boy of Indy. And he should be, because he's paid his dues, got all the way through the ranks, and he's good, good, good. And, you know, I think, you know, he didn't win today, but I think that, you know, we're going to see him, Ray Hall, even Marco Andretti, despite the criticism, is out there and had a good result today. But it's a big year. Then you've got Rossi, who he absolutely got, you know, got straight into the highlights of, you know, winning the 500, but now wants to show what he can do on a consistent basis. And I think that's going to be interesting, because we do have a bona fide Formula One driver who is absolutely capable of running with Carlos Sainz, running with Grosjean and all the rest of it. And I bet you the Formula One boys are watching what he does in Indy. And, you know, again, I think he's going to be a sensation. Ed Jones has just come in, the Brit from Indy Lights. He's looking good. Spencer Piggott, you know, you've got a lot of combination stories. And then you've got the old hands. You've got Scott Dixon, hungry again. I had a chance to talk to Scott when I was in New Zealand. And he really is enjoying this time in his life. And he might have four championships, but he wants more.
You talked about the teams, but we'll look at Andretti. What they had four cars in the top 11, because Rossi was 11th. Marco Andretti was 7th, and so four cars in the top 11. I mean, obviously they haven't done as well as the other teams you're talking about, but they've got a pretty good start here.
Yeah, and I think the other big story of today for me, we'll talk about the winner in a minute, but the other big story is Honda. I was just talking about Scott Dixon, they've swapped to Honda this year, Chip Ganassi, and everybody was like, God, is that a good idea? Because they hadn't really won much. Yeah, they won the 500, but, you know, that was like running out of fuel. And in terms of competitiveness, Honda just haven't had, a candle to hold against Chevy. And they do now. They really do, because they've come off the ranks. And I'm sure the Honda Motor Company was one of the I was working for BT Sport this morning doing the Indy coverage. And the commentator said, I bet Alonso's throwing shoes at his TV right now. Why can't his Honda work that good?
I knew you were going to Honda
exactly.
Formula One.
But I think it actually, worldwide, Honda are picking up the mantle. And they are also getting involved in TCR. They're getting involved in Rallycross. They're getting involved, and they're trying to, absolutely be the number one company in cars.
It's a lot of investment.
And bikes.
You're right. Yeah.
And bikes.
And bikes too. You're right.
And, it's been a real disappointment, the Formula One thing. So I don't think there's obviously a lot of correlation between what's going on in Indy and what's going on in Formula One, but it does have a bearing on the company. And I'm sure that Honda want to rectify it as soon as possible. Like I said, I've said it all along, Honda will come good with McLaren, and they will, but they already have now in Indy. And I think it will be something we'll see throughout the year. And like, again, you throw Chip Ganassi at anything, they're going to succeed.
All right. So what about Sebastian Bourdais?
I know. What a great story. What about the French Foreign Legion? Quite literally. Simon Pagenaud qualified 14th, the current champion. Sebastian Bourdais, four-time champion of Indy, qualified at the back. Well, he didn't even qualify because he crashed in qualifying. So that means he couldn't go back out. So you lose out.
Was that chance. Disruptive?
That was very. It's certainly for the team. It was awfully so. There was an entente non cordial for the Frenchman. He came. I'm coming to get you. Turn sad. Basically, he took his glasses off.
Oh my God! He took his glasses off. Yeah,
he did. Actually, he cried at the end. Actually, it was very emotional. Sebastian Bourdais. Anyway, it was a brilliant run from the back, and interestingly enough, he did a brilliant overtaking maneuver on the champion, Simon Pagenaud, fellow Frenchman. There was a quick cutter. You could almost see it. He didn't do it, but, there was definitely a lot of pleasure. And I remember I said on BT Sport this morning, I said, I think the reason we saw so much emotion from Sebastian Bourdais is that he's joined Dale Coyne Racing, which was, everybody said, what, why? That's a tiny team.
Yeah.
It is a tiny team. They have the odd win here and there, but it was a risk, but nobody else had taken him. So effectively, Bourdais took a gamble. He took an old crew with him, and they're based in Chicago. So to use the Blues Brothers expression, he was getting the band back together.
Yeah.
And very emotional. I'm really happy for him. And he also, the way he did it, what I was trying to say was beating Pagenaud is really going to be what he wanted, because Pagenaud has become, you know, the blue-eyed boy after Joseph Newgarden of the series with that championship last year. So as a Frenchman, he really wanted to get some, you know, kudos back.
Look, he won an IndyCar race. I can't blame the guy for being emotional. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Formula One. And then, of course, in about 15 minutes, we got Matt Bell joining us, and we're also going to talk a little World Superbikes, because Nicky Hayden was creeping up in the standings this week, a little better than last week. Listen to Speed City live from Austin, Texas. Be back after these messages.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas, with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable, and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself. Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Thanks for making the right choice.
I don't know where I would get the truth if it weren't for you.
Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Jay Leno from JayLenosGarage.com, and you're listening to Speed City.
City. Hi, Jay. Hi, Jay.
That's not bad.
Hi, Jay.
All right, welcome back.
Speed City.
Man, it was a miserable day in Austin. What the heck? 40-something degrees?
I did not come to this area of the world to be cold. Yeah. I come from a cold area.
Well, all the South by people are wandering around. Nobody has coats.
It was like England last night. Yeah. It was raining.
Well, it's miserable today, too. You can't see Circuit of the Americas. I'm looking out the window. It's too cloudy.
I'm going back to New Zealand. It was summer there, man.
Well, it's Austin is a buzz with South by. In fact, I was talking to somebody, and they said, well, "Austin, how is it with how the natives deal with South by?" And I said,
"They don't. They go home."
I said, "A lot of them leave," and I said, "A lot of them thought that Formula One was going to be that way." And he said, "Oh, Formula One? Yeah, I heard that was in Austin." And I said, "We were talking about the impact on the city." And I said, "Yeah, actually, Formula One has double the economic impact of South by." And he was like, "No way."
Yeah.
And I said, "What's your email?" And I sent him the link to this impact study that it shows. It's the same company that did the South by study and did the Formula One study, showing $508 million worth of impact from
Formula One. What is it Bobby says? What is it? 10 million in tips.
And gratuities. That's right.
It's a great line.
But the fact that it is almost double what South by. I mean, obviously, South by is fantastic for the city, but let's don't forget what Formula One does.
And closely followed by MotoGP. You know, I was looking at MotoGP the other day. Man, the crowd for MotoGP is great. And of course, if you haven't got your tickets yet, April 21st and 23rd, also come to the test.
That's right.
We'll be at the test.
That's right. The Moto America test.
And that's the Moto America test, because Moto America, of course, have their first round on the same weekend that MotoGP. So if you're an American motorcycle fan, you can't not be in Austin.
Yeah.
John's got a spare couch, sure. And Les has probably got
just
one.
Shoot me. I'll just put my address
up. Les is famous for taking in the waifs and strays. He'll let you stay.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Les.
He's got empty rooms now.
He's taking the night off. I think he's going to see a concert, taking his wife.
Yeah, what's that all about?
I don't know. I just said yes, sir. And when he said
yes, sir. He is the man. Maybe he's cutting the ribbon.
He is the mayor. That's true.
Pat Benatar going, hey, Les, get up here. We need to start this thing.
All right. Well, let's talk. Speaking of Formula One, let's talk some Formula One.
Right. I'm with you.
There's several stories. I want to start with the one about Ferrari taking Liberty Media up on their offer to buy.
Taking a liberty, aren't they?
Taking liberties.
They're taking a liberty.
And they bought some shares because, you know, Formula One came out. I mean, Liberty Media came out and said when they bought Formula One that they were going to offer up shares for the teams, and nobody bid at first, but Ferrari stepped up.
There's a couple of aspects of this story I really like. One, Liberty are taking a liberty. No, but one part I really like about this is they've got to change the model, right? It's been done one way, literally, since Bernie's era back in the early 70s, and it's been massively successful. Let's not, I keep saying that, you can't reiterate it.
Right.
It's now the biggest sport in the world, thanks to Bernie Eccleston. But he had a way of doing things that perhaps doesn't necessarily, and it certainly has over the years, wrangled the teams. When Bernie took over Formula One, the teams had no money. And there was hardly any there wasn't any sponsorship. So he turned this into a money-making factory for all of these teams. Now you've got big sponsors, you've got big TV, and you've got big manufacturers involved. And it's always been lopsided towards Ferrari, because if you've got to remember your history here, Ferrari were, if you like, back in 1950 was the first ever Grand Prix at Silverstone, right? Back in that day, Ferrari, Enzo Ferrari, ruled all, especially in car racing. And it was, Enzo used to laugh at the English, baby English manufacturers bringing their toys. What do they know? And so Ferrari were always the most powerful thing in Formula One. And that has been, in the Concord agreements over the years, also the way that the power has been spread. Ferrari have always had a bigger say. It's never really been that public until probably about 10 years ago, just what a hold Ferrari had.
And what you mean by that is how they get a disproportionate share
Correct.
Of the money.
Of the money that is, distributed to the teams. So that has always wrangled the likes of Red Bull, who came in, a lot later. And, they are the quintessential sort of modern Formula One team. It's, it's a drinks maker, so it's got nothing to do with cars per se. And then you've got McLaren, who are a big player too. And then you've got the smaller teams, and we've lost one in Manor at the beginning of the year. And there's been failed teams like the US team that failed to get in on the grid. That was a fear for Haas, and Haas did the right thing and waited an extra year before they came and developed, and also did a brilliant deal with Ferrari to become effectively their junior team. And as Toro Rosso are a junior team as well. But companies like Sauber struggled year in, year out to make the budgets. And I think that's what I'm in a long-winded way of saying, that's what Liberty is trying to rectify. And I think it's a brilliant idea, because like a modern day company, you buy shares in a company, you're invested.
Yeah.
And if you buy 80% of the shares, you're going to get a bigger vote.
Yeah.
So I think it's somewhat ironic, because when this was first posted a few weeks ago by Liberty, nobody took it up.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody really... Ross Brawn made a very interesting comment, which was... he's now part of, the Liberty setup and the new look Formula One. But one of the... it wasn't Ross Brawn that said it. I think it was Christian Horner, but saying it to Ross Brawn, which is, what are we buying into here? What are we buying shares of?
Yeah,
the Concord
yeah.
Agreement changes in 2020. So, 2020... So basically... What we're trying to say is, if you're offering me a share, what's the share of?
If it's going to change, what are you going to sell me?
But
anyway,
long story short, Ferrari have gone in, not in a big way, but in a way that I think the other teams will follow, because I think all the teams should be invested in some way, shape, or form. And that's what will make the modern Formula One, or the new look Formula One, a greater asset to all of them.
Yeah, it looks like about a $12 million in cash and another $3 million in some stock equities. So, let's say roughly $14, $15 million. But let me ask you this. Do you think, we talk about Ferrari versus, like you said, there's been times when other teams have been dominant, right? In fact, it's been a while since Ferrari's been dominant on the track. I mean, currently, Mercedes' crazy dominance, Red Bull's recent dominance. I mean, we've had times when McLaren was
McLaren
dominant, Williams.
McLaren and Honda won 15 of 16 races.
Yeah, so there's been these periods, but Ferrari still got that disproportionate share of the money. Do we think that that's going to change when there is a new agreement?
It's a delicate one because, you know, the truth of the matter is, and now we get to brands, and this is one thing that, Bernie was right on, definitely for sure. The Ferrari brand, I mean, the argument, because, you know, there's always been talk of breakaways and all the rest of it. And basically, you take Ferrari out of the picture, and a lot of people would argue that Formula One would not be the same without that mark. You know, new teams will come and go, and new teams like Haas can come in and be part of the fold. But without Ferrari, it's such a benchmark and it's such an iconic brand.
Well, think of it this way. Look, what does every driver, if you ask any driver what's their goal? Look at Sebastian Vettel. He was sitting four championships in a row and left and said, I'm going to Ferrari because to them it is, you know, the pinnacle. Drive F1 for Ferrari, your career is complete then.
But, you know, we're also of a generation that do get weepy-eyed both about the noise and about the name Ferrari. Perhaps we shouldn't. I mean, what if Tesla came in to Formula One and, you know, started doing what they do really well? And what if the world started going towards more electric racing and they became, you know what I mean? The world changes. I mean, you know, I'm sure we'd all get teary-eyed if Tom Brady hung up his boots just as Tony Romo has in football terms, because, you know, Lionel Messi will eventually stop playing soccer, as will Wayne Rooney. And, you know, these are iconic figures. You know, I'm afraid, you know, the Bulls have lost Jordan, but, you know, new names come in. So,
yeah, I mean, you know what? You're exactly right. It's a great example is South by Today. Everything moves so fast.
I heard it was disruptive today.
And there were so many. I mean, every corner you turn, there was a startup doing this and fascinating ideas about this and this. And the world is changing so fast. So, but thinking back to going back to Ferrari, when you talk to people about racing and you think about the Ferrari, the car, the road cars themselves, there's no comparison. Yeah, Mercedes makes some amazing road cars, even at the highest end, and arguably close to as fast as Ferrari. And McLaren does the same thing with their road cars, but nobody compares to Ferrari in that world. You know, they are the pinnacle of the. Of the sports car manufacturer. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that.
Yeah, Ducati and Ferrari have managed to create a lifestyle out of the
brand. That's what it is, yes.
A lifestyle, iconic, aspirational tool, if you will. Mercedes have tried to, you know, have copied it and not
Lamborghini,
copied it,
but, you could argue.
Yeah, but not so. I think Ferrari's still a benchmark. Talking of the benchmark, we're looking at the test times.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
They're also walking the walk and talking the talk. Kimi Raikkonen, mwah.
Mwah.
Kimi, I love that.
Yeah.
Every interview, you've got to look it up on YouTube. Look at.
What's the hashtag?
Mwah.
Hashtag
B-M-O-A-H.
Yeah, something like that.
Kimi Raikkonen, fastest, 118.6, 111 laps. Verstappen in the Red Bull, 119.4. This is all at Barcelona. They've been testing at Barcelona. Carlos Sainz doing a really good job for Toro Rosso there, up there. Bottas has definitely got to grips with the Mercedes. He was actually quicker than Hamilton, but by a smidgen. And they did equal amount of laps. Can you draw much conclusion? Ferrari, yeah. Vettel's
who's sandbagging, who's not?
You know, while Kimi's going, Vettel's saying not much either. What I'm getting at is that they don't sandbag, but they also don't. What you see here in Barcelona won't necessarily be. What Vettel's come out and said is Mercedes is still a target. As we come to the top of a couple of tests doesn't mean that Ferrari are going into this season going, hey, we got this. There's always a surprise at Albert Park. I think the surprise will be Red Bull. I think Mercedes will be. Here's the front row.
Okay, there you go. That's an easy way to do this.
Hamilton, Bottas, Ricciardo. No. Hamilton, Ricciardo, Verstappen, Bottas.
Okay.
And I want everybody out there to give me your first two rows of Formula One.
Ah, there you go.
Write in, or call us, in fact.
Yeah,
you call us. Hey, Kelly, there's a job for you. Well, you wanted to give a shout-out to our top fan.
I know. Kevin Kelly, one of our top fans.
We love you, mate.
He tweeted us. He said, don't forget the time change.
Thanks. I needed it.
don't forget to get to studio on time.
I almost missed my indie show. So could you call him a little bit earlier next year?
By the way, if you do want to call in, 512-643-LIVE, 512-643-5483. All right, we're going to take a break, guys, because when we come back, we've got Matt Bell going to join us, going to talk about driving the Audi R8 in IMSA Sebring next weekend. He's racing for Stevenson Racing. So we'll be back after these messages. Tune in back to Speed City.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable, and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane. MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Here, when you need us, Talk 1370 is the right choice.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City.
That's awesome. We have one of the greatest racing drivers of all time on Speed City.
Yeah, we've interviewed him a couple times. Are you kidding? Mario will give anybody time, fans, media, whoever.
And when the Circuit of the Americas announced that was the ambassador, I was just like, I'm going to meet him?
I know.
I've spent hours with the guy, and I love it.
You know what? I have to tell you, because it was when we first started Speed City, and I was going to do an interview with him, and I had to do a recording, and I had the little MP3 recorder, and I was so nervous. I thought, you know what? I don't know if I got the settings right. I'm going to turn on my iPhone, too, and I held them both.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out I screwed up, because I had the iPhone was my backup. That was the only way I got
Speed
that
City
interview.
Correspondents and wannabe correspondents of the future. Good little point for you.
Yeah, it's true. You know what? I want to talk about Mario. We got Matt Bell holding just 1 second, Matt, because Mario tweeted today, and it was a fantastic tweet. I want to see if I can find it, because he tweeted out an awesome... Oh, darn it. Let me see if I can find it. He was... here he is. He said, Ken Griffey Jr. suited up today in IndyCar's race. He said, Ken, baseball player. He said, don't worry, Ken. It's like watching a 180-mile-an-hour fastball. You got this. It was
great. Yeah.
It was great. All right. Well, we're going to go to our guest now, because we have a fantastic race car driver on the line, and he is getting ready for Sebring. We have Matt Bell, who's racing the number 57 Audi in Sebring next week. Matt, welcome back to Speed City.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate it. So that 57 Audi looks pretty awesome, that R8. So tell us about what you're about to do and how your season's been so far.
Well, the season's really just kicked off. But as far as mileage goes, we've already run the car about as much as we're going to do the rest of the season. So we had the 24-hour of Daytona already. We did quite well there. We were quite happy with how we did. The IMSA schedule then puts the next longest race directly after it, which is obviously the 12-hour of Sebring, I think we're going to do pretty well at the car. We tested well there recently. We did reasonably well last year, especially in the bad weather. So, yeah, I think we're all optimistic. I think we're excited to get into it.
Awesome. Well, so, we've been watching a couple of the Stevenson drivers and stuff this year. But so who's going to be driving with you?
We're gonna have Andrew and Lawson with me in the car, and that's mostly due to the restrictions that are placed on us through the driver rating system. So Robin is mostly focusing right now on the GS program that we're going to actually our first race will be at Circuit of the Americas.
Yeah, awesome. We want to talk about that.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about, you're from California, right?
Yep.
And we have so many drivers on the show that are from all over the world, and it's just, I love it to have
Has it stopped raining yet?
Yeah.
Today's actually, the last couple of days have been beautiful. It always seems to do this. It gets really good right before I leave.
So tell me about the Camaro GT4.
Well, you might know as much about it as I do. I actually haven't seen it, but I know Lawson has just had some success with it in St. Pete. The first qualifying session it has ever done, it went and got pole. So that's really impressive. Lawson's got to get that done. You know, he and I have both had pretty long careers with the Camaro platform. So, you know, I think he's going to do great in PWC, and I'm hoping that Robin and I will do quite well with the, in the GS class. But, the car's different. It's not really, it's not an evolution necessarily of the Z28 that we left off with. That car essentially is going away or has already left, with kind of the change from GS over to essentially a global GT4. The GT4 class on paper is really just GT3 light. the cars are really similar to GT3 cars, yeah. But they're based a little bit more on the road car. That said, I think I'm going to miss a little bit the old H patterns. I'm going to miss the really, I guess, road car based aspects of the GS class. But at the same time, I'm really excited for the prospects that the GT4 cars are bringing. And I think GS is really a prime spot to showcase these new GT4 cars.
Well, you brought it up. I just want to touch on this a little bit. The Camaro has become, the road-going Camaro, based on the same chassis as the CTS-V, it has become a force in handling and an overall balanced car. The new ZL1, they've just started hitting the magazines, are testing, Motor Trend tested one, and they're saying it was faster than the McLaren. It was faster than the BMW M Series. This is with Randy Pope's, a race car driver, driving it around either Willow Springs or one of those out in California. I mean, they're saying it is a phenomenal, unbelievable platform that's faster than cars that are, you know, multiples, you know, and Camaros have always done that in a straight line. But now we're talking about, you know, handling and braking and straight line performance. It's really an amazing platform. And I know that the GT4 is going to be the GT4R that you get to drive. I know it's not quite the same thing based on all that, but it's got to be it's going to be a huge leap forward, I would imagine.
Absolutely. You know, I actually haven't had really any laps around the track in the new Gen 6 Camaro, so I'm excited to give it a shot. But I think this isn't the General Motors of the 90s. This is an engineering powerhouse, and when they make the decision to put something to the public, it's really going to be an impressive thing. Look at the new Z06. Look at the Z28 with the Camaro 5. I mean, on paper, that car should never have been able to do what it did.
Right.
And of course, there's going to be shortcomings for essentially a Holden Commodore chassis with that much power, with that much thought toward making it go around a racetrack fast. And I think all of those have been addressed with the new car. And the ZL1 1LE, I think, really is a great, I guess, identifier for what General Motors can really do if they put their skunk works toward a road car. And I don't think I've spoken to anyone about that car, that road car. Race car drivers, car enthusiasts, like a dentist, I don't think there's anyone that doesn't want that car. I mean, that's kind of the Nissan GTR of this year, and it's just so impressive. Now, while the GT4 car doesn't share a powertrain with that car, the new body, I think, is one of the most aggressively awesome body shapes that I think any American manufacturer's come out with, and honestly, I think one of the greatest true hot rod bodies that I've seen in a while. And I'm just excited to see that thing go around the track.
I know. I'm looking at a picture of it right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at it over your shoulder.
Yeah, that is an amazing-looking car. But 2 points you talked about, General Motors. Arguably, right now, there's several people that claim that the ATS-V is the best-handling car on the planet. I mean, we're talking about a mid-size four-door sedan from Cadillac.
Yeah.
Arguably, because the way they describe the magnetic suspension that's on that, by the way, Cadillac invented back in the 90s, which is now licensed by Ferrari. Think about that for just a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about a technology license that was built for back in the 90s Cadillacs. We're talking boats, sedan DeVilles. You know, it came out on the STS, the Cadillac STS, but that magnetic suspension on the ATS-V is just magical, the way they describe how, you know, it can soak up a bump, totally keep the car planted to the ground, and you know, make up for any misgivings or whatever. So it's just the technology that GM has devoted to handling and engineering. It's got to trickle down to that GT4 that you're about to get to drive later this year.
Yeah, and Matt, go ahead, Matt.
All I was going to say is I would agree. I think that's the case, and I got a chance to drive both the ATS-V and the CTS-V at Sonoma, and in fact, I coached some people for Auto Week in the ATS-V, and we coached them alongside the new M4. And the interesting thing was, everyone kind of agreed the same way, where they basically said the M4 is obviously a great car. They went into the test knowing it was a great car, but the one that surprised them the most was the ATS-V. And I would have to agree. I mean, it's just such an awesome car. And obviously, as you guys pointed to, it shares a platform with the new Camaro 6 and obviously our GT4 car.
You know, Matt, it's great to hear you talk so proudly about American cars. And I can take a little humble pie here. As a European who's come to the States, you know, we've always been in Europe very snobbish towards American cars. Yes, there's lots of power. Yes, there's lots of muscle. But what Corvette are doing and have done for the last 10 years, what Cadillac doing, what the Camaro you just mentioned, and so on and so forth. You're right. We're back in an era now, and John quite rightly put it, that the handling now and the precision, which I think, you know, has been gleaned off the likes of Audi and BMW, who have been making great cars for a long time. But you know, I really do think that now they are on a par, if not, and the Le Mans results, certainly in the GT category, shows, you know, America is back.
I agree, and that's a great thing. You know, growing up, even in the I don't want to get too political, but even in California, where we don't share all the same sort of red, white, and blue tendencies that the rest of the country does, especially with car type, you can't grow up here without loving some American car, right? It's rare to go into some teenage boy's room without seeing a poster of you know, a Cobra or a Camaro or a Corvette or something along those lines.
True.
But at the same time, I definitely grew up in an era where European cars were definitely reigning supreme, especially in California.
I got you.
You know, and so now I'm really happy and really proud to see these American muscle cars back up some of their muscle with just proper engineering, and they really are fun. Even the Camaro 5 1LE. I got to play around with those a few times on the racetrack, and it was one of the best handling rear-wheel drive modern sports cars that I've ever driven around the racetrack. Not in peak lateral G, not in top speed, just in the characteristics it had, in how it entered corners, how it exited corners, how it planted the nose while you're braking for the corner, all the feedback it gave you. And I think if we were back in 1995 and you brought that car back in time and showed someone, they would probably have said that's a BMW, but it wasn't. And I'm really happy to see that that's the trend.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And then speaking of California, and you know, we talk about the proverbial poster on the wall from the 60s, 70s, 80s, or whatever. You know, the California one, Tesla. I mean, my gosh, we're talking about cars that do 0 to 60 in the low twos now, 2.4 or whatever. Amazing American technology. And that's something to be proud of if you're talking about the California lifestyle. And I'd happily take a Tesla P100D. No problem
there.
There
you go. Hey, Matt.
Go ahead.
I got a question for you. Did you watch the NASCAR today?
I did not watch the NASCAR race today.
Okay, because we wanted you. The only reason being that there was a crash at the end of it between Joey Logano and
NASCAR?
Kyle Busch. Yes. Yeah, guess what? A fight broke out afterwards, but a real one too. No. You'll want to check this.
Wow.
Yeah, Logano and Kyle Busch on the last corner came together, and basically Logano took Busch down the pit lane, or he went down the pit lane and therefore didn't finish. So then Kyle got out the car and went a couple of rounds with Joey. Got a decent punch in before the whole of the rest of the Penske team crowded in.
Bloodied his head.
But I want to, maybe you can tweet out your opinion of that crash after the show, because we'd like to get a proper racing driver's opinion on who was at fault and whether Kyle was just being a bush. Because we know they like a fight or two. Do you follow Formula One then? How about that?
I try to as much as I can.
All right, who's your front row for the first race at Albert Park? I can tell you Ferrari and Mercedes have been up in there and testing, if you haven't followed the testing, but who do you think's going to be the guys to watch this year?
You know, I don't want to say I'm a huge Hamilton fan. I think Hamilton's a great driver, and I think when it comes down to it, regardless of what you think, what you think of him as a person, of his personality, he definitely knows how to get it done. So, I never really gamble against Lewis on that stuff. But outside pole, that's a. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I went for my front row, and I put my marker down now. So Hamilton pole, Ricciardo at home, second in the Red Bull, then Verstappen, his teammate, and then Bottas, who's in the second, is in the other Mercedes now. So that was mine. But I haven't included Ferrari, so I don't know why I did that.
I was just going to say, I'll take yours, and I'll insert Kimi Raikkonen in second. How about that?
So, yeah, I'm just translating. Ooh, I'm just translating.
Not Sebastian Vettel either.
So if you get this subject matter again, Matt, here's what I've come up for a phrase for you. It's not that I don't like Hamilton, but too much bling, but he sure can win. There you go.
Yeah.
That is about the perfect win. Actually, honestly, I feel essentially the other way about Ricciardo, because I have huge respect for Danny Ricciardo as a person and I guess the more personal side of his driving. But I don't know if he's the guy necessarily to beat someone like Lewis Hamilton. And if I was hanging out with both of them, I probably wouldn't talk to Lewis, and Daniel seems like my kind of person. So
yeah, well, you're right on that account.
I think Daniel Ricciardo's got a little more fire in there than, he is a nice guy, and he's a nice guy in person too. But I think there's some fire, some competitiveness there that, I mean, obviously to this level you have to be, but I think he's got more than we give him credit for.
I think you might be right. I'm trying to remember there was a whole film series. What's not film, is it? Because it's digital. I don't know why I said film, but there's a video series that my wife does the same thing. She says film. Let's watch the film.
Like, yeah, we all do it. Don't worry.
Projector.
Roll the tape back. What tape?
There's no tape.
Roll the memory chips back.
Digital tape for a little while. But Red Bull did a whole video series about Daniel Ricciardo. It wasn't necessarily about him, but it almost seemed like they picked him for the guy anyway. But him going from, Formula Renault up to Formula One, and it really was interesting seeing everyone's personalities. And I really liked how he handled everything. And he wasn't always the fastest guy. He lost quite often to his teammates, but I really enjoyed watching, I guess, behind the scenes of what his personality really is like, because it is difficult to see it on the Formula One broadcast stuff. Obviously, their job there is like, it's less so to find drama as it is in NASCAR, and it's a little bit more to I guess showcase their driving talent. And obviously, anyone can put a mask on and make themselves seem interesting, and that's why I love hearing these Kimi stories. You don't have to stumble far across Twitter or Facebook to see a Lewis story. But really hearing what Daniel Ricciardo is like is, I don't know, it's fun. It seems like a really awesome guy.
And you picked the right guy for me anyway, because I've known Daniel since he was 15, because he came straight out of Australia, and the Australian single-seater scene still isn't that strong. And so he came to Asia, where I did the Formula BMW Championship, and he unfortunately found himself up about a guy that you've probably raced against and certainly know know, Earl Bamba and another Australian, Sam Arbe. And between Arbe and Bamba, they won all the races, and Ricciardo had to come third. I want to say, I don't think he won a race that season. It was totally dominated by Bamba, and we all know where he's gone. But, you know, and that's why the tenacity of Daniel Ricciardo to get to Formula One after what was, well, what must have been a debilitating start to his real first international foray. And now he's the guy, you know, doing the business at Formula One. And he was the one of that group that, if you like, made it to Formula One. Says everything about the guy.
I agree. And that, I think, was really my point that I was trying to make. Exactly the point you made, which is I honestly think perhaps his personality is why he's getting all this, why he's enjoying the success. And I actually like stories like that, because I guess in a level of Formula One, it is really easy to just segregate everyone based on statistic.
Yeah.
Because it is such close racing, and there is a incredibly finite number of drivers and teams that have the opportunity to do it. And when they do have that opportunity, they're all very close. And so it's very easy to say, okay, first, second, third. But in the rest of the world, in sports car racing, there are so many shades of gray within the results that really you can hide or I guess really advertise talent quite easily, and in misleading ways. So it's fun to watch, I guess, someone that seems like his personality, his intelligence is really why he's there. And I do rate the guy quite high as a driver. Obviously, he's doing something amazing, but it was really fun, I guess, to digress a little bit. It was very fun watching that that series and seeing how someone like that was able to progress all the way through Red Bull up into Formula One.
Yeah. Well, Matt, we've got to wrap it up, but we really appreciate you, Matt Bell, coming on the show. Good luck with the Stevenson Motorsports team racing the Audi and Sebring next week. It's going to be awesome, and good luck in the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And, of course, we'll see you here in Austin at Circuit of the Americas and driving that Camaro as well. So thank you very much, Matt Bell, for coming on Speed City.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me on.
We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, see you soon.
All right, we got to take a break. You're listening to Speed City Live in Austin, Texas, and we will be back after these messages.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas, with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable, and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself. Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane. The racetrack. It's where legends are born, where only the finest machines earn their reputation for innovation and dominance. Such are the nameplates you'll find at Aston Martin of Austin, Lotus of Austin, Bentley Austin, and Rolls-Royce Motorcars. Austin, exotic, iconic automobiles whose racing heritage turns everyday driving into an inspiring journey, because you're never just along for the ride. Highway 183 north of McNeil Road.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
My name is Christina Nelson, and this is Speed City.
And I hope she has a good season this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good girl power. She's very good.
Les Kaiser has his footprint on every show. The music, though.
He does, doesn't he?
That's his choice. It's awesome. All right, so Jonathan, you've been bugging me about this story you've been wanting to talk about, Surtees.
Yeah, sadly, to this week, the world of motorsport has lost one of its greatest. 83 years of age, to be fair, he had a good innings, as we say in England. John Surtees has passed away finally at the age of 83. But in my mind, I'm going to read you his stats in a minute, and I don't think you are aware, and a lot of people aren't aware. First of all, his one big stat: he was the only man to win both the motorcycle GP or motorcycle championship, Grand Prix championship, and the Formula One World Championship.
Oh, wait. So he won
on 2 and 4.
Yeah, that.
So Schumacher didn't do that. Valentino.
No, nobody's done that.
Nobody's
right?
Done that.
No one else has done it, right?
No, absolutely no one's done it. But listen to this. So he won the 500cc motorcycle world championship when they were 500ccs, mind you, in 56, 58, 59 and 1960 on an MV Agusta.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He then went into Formula One and won 22 Formula One races. And, he won six of his 111 starts. He also took third place in a Ferrari at Le Mans in 1964. the story I want to tell you was he went on, though, to be involved in motorsport. And probably my greatest motor racing moment, I never raced a car, but I went karting on a corporate day or whatever. And that doesn't sound too exciting, but I got on the podium and we did very well. It was a very corporate affair and it was just a bunch of blokes out of their suits just hooning around, but I had a good time. And I got up on the podium and I get to get my third prize. Who presents it? John Surtees. He goes, "Well done." I said, "Oh my gosh, this piece of plastic cup is nothing. I get to shake the greatest hand in motor racing and you're giving me a motor racing prize." So that was it. I was done. I went home. I flew for about 3 weeks after that.
That's awesome.
Lovely, lovely man. And if you don't know John Surtees and you're not aware of his history, look him up.
I think. How do you spell the last name?
Surtees.
Surtees.
John Surtees, yeah. A fantastic ambassador for the sport and a true gentleman. Sadly, sadly missed.
Well, I want to talk about World Superbikes too.
Talking to bikes?
Yeah, talking to bikes. But yeah, go ahead. Let's talk. Let's jump to Superbikes. Let's do that.
Well, Superbikes went to, God, I watched a lot of motorsport this weekend. Superbikes was in Thailand this weekend and they were at the Buram circuit where I've been last year for touring cars and GTs. Great circuit. Thailand's really coming on in its motorsport. But it was the four races in now, effectively two rounds at Phillip Island, both won by Johnny Ray. And again, he did it again. The Kawasaki man, world champion. He blitzed everybody. And they've even got a reverse grid now.
Oh,
for
yeah.
Race
so
two.
He,
so
he
started
at
ninth.
The bottom, right?
Yeah. So, you know, pretty impressive.
So he's won all the races
all
so
the races
far.
So far. Chaz Davis is keeping him honest. He's second in the championship, and that's the Ducati. I think they will come good, but they're going to have to come good quick because it's the first time, and the commentator got it right because I was there. First time since 2003 when another Brit, Neil Hodgson from Burnley, Lancashire, got the first four wins in a row and then went on to dominate. And then he lost a lot of the later races in the year and made it very close with him and his teammate Ruben Zass. But he is starting off brilliantly and the others have got to start winning or he's going to run away with it and he's going to make Superbikes really boring. Quick footnote, Nicky Hayden, Stefan Bradl. Bradl fell off. Hayden did get another top finish. He started in the reverse grid six. Not a bad result. And those who are saying, well, why is Nicky so far down? It's a brand new bike, guys. Honda have finally got a new bike. It's going to take some time to dial in. And I hope that by the time he comes here for Laguna in July, he's up to speed. And wouldn't that be special if Nicky is flying at Laguna?
Yeah, that would be special. And you know, look,
quick plug for Jill there in Laguna because she's a good friend. And so, yeah, get your tickets for Laguna too.
Well, and I know it's only been 2 weeks, but he did better this week than last week, moved up. So if he keeps doing that, who knows?
Yeah, it's going to be a good season. But like I said, they got to rein Ray in because he's a gritty-eyed Irishman. And once he gets his mindset on something, he ain't going to go. He could quite happily win all the races.
All right, we got to wrap it up. And if you heard a British voice talking NASCAR, tell your friend Speed City.
Yeah, baby.
All right, thanks.
Boogity, boogity, boogity.
Thanks for tuning in. Check us out on our website, speedcitybroadcast.com. Talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.